Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am chatting with Mark Chandler, a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog that I visit every day. Now, Mark, let's recap kind of what we saw last week. It seems like the world, in terms of markets, in terms of finances, in terms of, a lot of things, took kind of a small step back from the edge. We saw US and China, they're getting back to the trade talk tables, but again, it's, as you said to me off mic, more talk about talk, no actual deal being done. The UK, they're also working on blocking a hard Brexit, a lot of muddiness around that. We saw stock markets bounce back after they were looking weak. Yields actually bounce back a little bit. Recap last week, some of the significance of the step back from that almost financial crisis edge that we were on.
Yeah, I think that the, to your point, everything looked messy and things looked a bit calmer last week. There was a deal, a compromise. Chief executive in Hong Kong agreed to formally withdraw this controversial extradition bill. Italy was able to put together a government. Like you say, the Brexit deal looked like it was a hard Brexit, a Brexit with no deal, looked like it was being blocked. We had some in the U.S., besides the U.S. and China talks that are back on for next month, the U.S. reported some relatively good data last week, including, even though the jobs data was a bit disappointing, in general, people's views on the economy hadn't really changed very much. That is to say, the market is still like as confident as it can be that the Fed will cut rates 25 basis points in a couple of weeks. So I think the important thing is that the, give you an example, the Canadian dollar and the Canadian dollar and the Mexican peso, which often trade as risk assets, they've been down for 7 weeks in a row coming into last week. Both of them rallied. Bank of Canada, sticking with its neutral stance, might have helped the Canadian dollar, but we didn't just see it in Canada. Like I say, we saw it in Mexico. And also, the Aussie and Kiwi from down under, they were down for the past 6 weeks in a row, and then they rallied last week as well. So I think they were seeing like that's sort of like just a relief type of thing. And the weakest currencies last week were the safe havens, like the Swiss franc and the Japanese yen. So my sense, too, is looking at the S&Ps, it's kind of exciting. The S&Ps had been in a 28-20, 29-50 trading range for all of August. And here in the first part of September, we pushed through there. We gap above it. Two gaps in a row last week. And it's I think you had to go back a couple of years to find that happen like that. So bottom line here, markets takes a step away from the edge, but it's not a very solid step yet. Now, Hong Kong, I'd say the demonstrators have evolved beyond just the extradition bill. They're looking for more direct elections of the chief executive, which they probably will not get. Italy, they did elect a new government, but now the hard work really begins, and that's the 2020 budget. So I say the honeymoon probably is not going to be long. You know, it's not going to be a long honeymoon there. And I can't get excited yet about the U.S.-Chinese trade talks. I mean, I suppose it's better that they talk than they don't talk. But, you know, we just put on new tariffs on each other as of September 1st. The U.S. has another round to go. Those 25% tariffs are going to go up to 30% on October 1st, and then there's another round middle of December. I think that's really what the talks are about. Have we hurt ourselves enough for the other one to cry uncle and to have some compromise? My best guess right now is probably not.
Okay. Yeah, hey, I do not disagree with you. These trade talks, again, it's just more talks about talks, and they have a lot of hurdles to jump over now, even more than they started with. And the economies, especially in China and even in the U.S., it's starting to creep into the data. But to kind of recap what you were saying there, even though we had a little reprieve from all the worries and all the fear that was creeping into investors' minds, this isn't an all clear, is it? There is still a lot of worries. The system is still very fragile, and who knows? This might last longer than just a couple days or a week, but it also could turn around pretty quickly, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think that what we have to do as, I say, short, medium-term traders, as opposed to like with our investment hats, is have to decide whether this is likely to be a correction or a turn in the market. And I would think that still the burden of proof is that it needs to demonstrate there's more than a correction. And so far, at least in the currencies, and I would think as well as in the interest rates, it still seems to be corrective in nature rather than a major turning point in the market. I find the stock markets might be a little bit different in the sense that we've been consolidating in this range in, say, the S&Ps for months, and the price action does look constructive to me. And I suspect if we conclude that interest rates stay low for a long period of time, it's still not much of an alternative. And I think there'll be this fear of missing out might kick in if we get a nice close in the coming days after we get the U.S. inflation reports and the retail sales. We survived the ECB meeting. I can see how people begin talking again about it, run at the record highs.
Okay, but now what about that whole yield environment? Yields had just been crashing in the U.S. on even the short end and the long end, but they did get that little bit of a bounce on Thursday of last week. We still have rate cutting odds very high, I think 100% for a 25 basis point cut. 50 basis point cut, that's more off the table, I believe. However, some people will continue to talk about it. Fact of the matter is, even this little blip in yields still have the overall environment in very low yields and still very flat, if not inverted, yield curves. We don't see that changing, or you don't see that changing, do you?
No, I don't. I think that partly what a lot of people might not appreciate is how the mechanics of getting into the plumbing in the U.S. Treasury market. What happened last week, yields rose about 6 basis points on our 10-year note. It tested 160, but couldn't sustain above it. And what's happening, and this is why I say it's partly the plumbing, we had a flood of corporate bonds brought to the market. I'd say almost $50 billion worth of corporate bonds, and there's more in the pipeline after a little bit of a famine. They're now feasting, and what people do, what the dealers do, is people buy these corporate bonds. The hedge is to sell treasuries, means a higher yield. And so I think that part of the backing up of U.S. Treasury yields was this indigestion, if you will, having to absorb these corporate bonds and these hedges. But globally, last week, yields rose. I mean, you're looking at, say, 5 to 10 basis points in most of European countries, except, of course, Italy and Greece, which are still seeing their compression. My sense would be that there has been a near-term low in bonds, but that we're not going up very quickly, and that if anything, we're going to have to retest the downside as early as Thursday. The ECB is going to announce what it's going to do, and that is to say, many people expect at least a 10 basis point cut. Remember, they're at minus 40 basis points. Another 10. So there are some people talking about a 20 basis point move. My guess would be 10. They'd rather do two small bites than one big one. But also, there might be a new round of asset purchases. They might have to resume their quantitative easing, partly because last week what we learned was that the European locomotive, Germany, is still sputtering. Both factory orders and industrial production fell much more than the market expected, much more than economists expected. And so the pressure is on the ECB to do something. And the problem is, and this is where the market is caught, I think it helps fuel some of this rise in European yields. Some of the noted hawks in Europe, like the representatives of Germany at the ECB, like the Dutch representative at the ECB, they are pushing against quantitative easing, resuming these asset purchases. And some people think that that's a serious signal. My own reading of it would be that these are the likely suspects who have been opposed to quantitative easing since it was first unveiled. And so there'd be no economic conditions that they could accept to have QE. And this is despite this. I mean, Germany is, the Bundesbank itself says Germany may contract here in Q3, which after the recent data looks likely, it'll be the second quarter in a row. Germany, in what most people would recognize as a recession, and is still fighting more stimulus. The Bundesbank is opposed to fiscal stimulus, which I think Germany is going to be coming up with, but also more QE. So that means that the rate cut is just about a done deal, and it's going to be the debate about the QE, and I think they're going to go forward with it.
Okay, what about carrying that over to the Fed, too? Yes, the Fed will, again, most likely be cutting by 25 basis points. Do you see the Fed starting to throw out at least a little warning sign that we could have QE around the corner, or is this just going to continue to be focused on rate cuts and everyone gets to talk about will or won't the U.S. go into negative yields rather than issuing some sort of QE program before that time?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, especially, you know, former Fed Chair Greenspan had, I saw him on an interview saying that he thinks it's just a matter of time before the U.S. gets negative interest rates. I'm not there. I think that the countries that have negative interest rates, something happened before the bond market turned negative, and that is that the central bank put overnight interest rates or their interest rate target below zero. I don't think the Fed's going to do that, but I think I would be attentive to how the Fed is characterizing this up till now, right? We got Powell, and he's saying that this is a mid-course correction. The mid-course correction is an important phrase because it harkens back to Greenspan's use of that. Each time Greenspan used that phrase, the Federal Reserve cut rates three times. So the market's saying, okay, they cut in July, they're going to cut in September, and most likely cut at the end of October. The debate, and that's priced into the market, the September cut and the October cut are fully priced in the market. What's being debated and what is maybe data dependent is where they deliver another cut in December. I think that we have to get the Fed away from that mid-course correction talk to really take seriously the quantitative easing. I think that they'd only do new quantitative easing when the Fed funds target is approaching zero. And by approaching zero, I mean it falls below 1%. And I don't think that's likely until at least after Q1 next year. But I'm thinking that we're not going to see that, that this is a relatively shallow, soft spot in the economy. We see still strength in the U.S. service sector, U.S. consumers. Manufacturing is weak, but as you know, the manufacturing sector is only about 1/8 of the U.S. economy.
Okay. Yeah, some interesting points there. And I know you're on the side that, you know, the U.S. isn't just going to go through a major crash scenario, but the yield curve is saying that it could happen in about a year to two down the road. So could be a very different environment then, because a lot can happen in that time. Plus, that'll then be right around election time, too, which that'll just be a whole lot of craziness in the U.S. Just as a final comment for investors, yes, we saw a little bit of a bounce back in a wide range of markets and sectors. And you did even outline that, you know what, there is the potential of U.S. markets moving back to all-time highs. And you can make the argument that U.S. markets still have at least a little bit of a bias to the upside. What is kind of the main theme that you are thinking here? It doesn't sound like you think this was a full-on trend, long-term trend reversal that we saw last week.
Yeah, no, I'm not convinced that that's the case, though. You know, we had a big move on Wednesday, Thursday last week. That's when we had those two gaps. Friday, we basically traded sideways near those recent highs, just below, say, call it 2990 or 3000. I think that the two things are driving it. One, I think, is this, what else are people going to do with their savings? Can you really buy a 10-year U.S. bond yielding 150 when the S&P? So I think people are looking at the stocks have higher dividends and is worth the risk. And this is that fear of missing out. And we had that pullback. It held above that 200-day moving average. So I think that new marginal money is more committed to stocks than bonds. But I also think that things, I mean, what's the problem? I guess that the issue is that the, as bad as the U.S. might seem, sort of like looking under the hood of a car, other countries look worse. And the U.S. earnings, the U.S. corporates are still having a better return on investment than they do in Europe or Japan. And so I think that the U.S. stock market still seem to be sort of the commanding heights.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up there. Very interesting comments there, Mark. I am on my way to Beaver Creek, but I am glad that we could fit this interview in. Some very interesting comments and really understanding what is going on, not just in the U.S., but around the world. Mark, great chatting with you. Everyone, click that link below. Go visit Mark's blog, marktomarket.com. Have a great rest of your week there, Mark.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.